Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. I am your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, and the man who calls it right down the middle, Dion Tyre Gordon. Enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. In the words of 16-time world heavyweight champion, the Nature Boy Ric Flair, to be the man, woo, you got to beat the man. And by virtue of the Lakers 122-101 victory last night against the Golden State Warriors, eliminating them, the reigning, conquering, defending NBA world champions from the NBA playoffs right now, until a new champion is crowned, the Lakers are the man. The Los Angeles Lakers, in this very moment, find themselves limousine riding, jet plane flying, woo, styling and profiling, wheeling and dealing, kiss stealing, son of a gun. Space Mountain might be the oldest ride, but it still has the longest line. This Rolex watch on my wrist cost $5,000. This Armani suit cost $10,000. If I told you how much I paid for the gaiters on my feet, you'd probably kill yourself. The Los Angeles Lakers are going to the NBA Western Conference Finals, just like Dion Gordon predicted. Just like I said on this podcast, it wouldn't surprise me if we made it all the way to the NBA Finals. I said it out loud. I said it with my chest. I said it, and I meant it, and I stand on it. The Lakers are good enough to get to the NBA Finals, and then who knows what could happen. Does banner number 18 get raised? Anything's possible. Anything can happen. No one thought we would get this far. I didn't think we would get this far. The Lakers began this season 2-10. Trash, garbage, awful, pathetic, inept, miserable, shit, the drizzling shits, 2-10. A poorly constructed roster, a nonsensical assortment of players that don't fit with each other, a bunch of guys who can't shoot, a bunch of guys who play a similar style of basketball. Russell Westbrook, God bless him. I like Westbrook, but he didn't fit. It didn't make any sense. He needs to have the ball in his hands. Unfortunately for him, LeBron James also needs to have the ball in his hands. Last time I checked, the rules of basketball dictate that you're only allowed to play with one basketball at a time. So this creates a problem. He can't play. He cannot coexist alongside LeBron James. He now becomes an off-ball player. He can't shoot. How do you ask a guy who can't shoot to be an off-ball player? It doesn't work. It's a fucking disaster. And that's what it was early in the season. Patrick Beverley, Planet Fitness games every single night. Make sure you stop by the front desk and pick up your complimentary Tootsie Roll. Planet Fitness games. All you're out there doing is getting cardio and mean mugging people. That's all Patrick Beverley was doing playing for the Lakers. The roster didn't make sense. But then, around the All-Star break, deals were made, trades were made before the trade deadline. There was a roster reconstruction, a roster makeover. Westbrook, gone. Beverly, gone. Insert Rui Hachimura, Jared Vanderbilt, Malik Beasley, D'Angelo Russell. And then, all of a sudden, the Lakers become a younger, more athletic, more explosive, more dynamic, better defensively basketball team. They make sense now. The roster is actually legitimate. There's a reason for these guys to be here. They can function now. They can play basketball. After the All-Star break, the Lakers have been the best team in the league since the All-Star break. But they found themselves still only 34-37, still trying to dig out of that hole they created for themselves in the early parts, the early stages of the season. 11th in the NBA Western Conference, fighting to make it to the play-in tournament. And then they did. They get to the play-in game, and they play against the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they're losing that game at home. Rudy Gobert did not even play in that game. A depleted Minnesota Timberwolves team has you down by double digits at Staples Center. It's still Staples Center to me, goddammit. Until the Lakers win a championship at what they're calling Crypto.com Center, I refuse to call it that. Win a championship in that building under the new name, and I will call it Crypto.com Center. I will acknowledge it once a championship is won in that building. We're still 8 wins away from that happening. But you're fighting against a horrible Timberwolves basketball team to make the playoffs, to even advance in the play-in tournament. But you overcome that, and you win the game, and you make the playoffs as an NBA seventh seed in the NBA Western Conference. And then you upset the Memphis Grizzlies, 3-6 Mafia. You take them out. And then you move on to the semifinals against the reigning, conquering, defending NBA world champion Golden State Warriors. And you take them out in 6 games. And you made it look easy most of the time. And really, it was all about everything that was consistent during the season. Golden State fouls a lot. I know Warrior fans don't want to hear this. I know all the conspiracy theory people out there don't want to hear this, but this is reality and these are facts. The Warriors foul a lot. The Lakers during the regular season took a lot of free throws. Why? The Lakers play inside out. Golden State plays outside in. You live by the three, you die by the three. And the Warriors got lynched in this series by their own doing. You don't play aggressive basketball. How many times in this series did we see somebody in a Golden State Warrior uniform drive to the paint, stop, come to a complete halt, just stop and kick the ball back out to the perimeter, afraid, petrified, scared to challenge Anthony Davis or anyone for that matter in a Laker uniform at the rim and settle for a three. Attack the basket, initiate contact, go into his body, try to get a foul, try to go to the free throw line. Oh, that's not how you play basketball. That's fine. You guys have won a lot of games over the years taking jump shots, taking threes, but not this time and not this series. We ain't the one. I ain't studying what you're talking about, Warrior fans. You lost fair and square. Your team wasn't good enough. You had a fractured, disjointed, tumultuous season full of friction, internal friction. Draymond punching the lights out of Jordan Poole before the season started. Maybe he should punch him again. Maybe Draymond should have punched Jordan Poole again. Apparently, the first time he punched him, he knocked the talent out of him. Maybe Draymond should have snuffed him again to knock the talent back into him. He was garbage all season long, and especially in the playoffs. And your team, as a result, you had no chemistry whatsoever. Your team was up and down, guys missing games. Steph missed about 26 games this season. Klay Thompson was inconsistent. Sometimes he looked like the Klay Thompson of old. Sometimes he looked washed. Sometimes Klay Thompson looked good. Sometimes he looked washed. Andrew Wiggins missed 45 games this season, primarily because of things off the court that are none of my business. I'm not even going to speculate, but the fact is he missed 45 games. You guys were fucked up all season long, and it carried over into the playoffs. And you got by Sacramento, but look at everything it took to beat Sacramento. You had to go a full 7. Steph Curry had to score 50 points in the game 7 to beat the Sacramento Kings. You guys were abysmal all season long on the road. At home, you guys were good. At Chase Center, you guys can beat anyone. But on the road, you guys were the Washington Generals. And no matter who you played against, they were the Harlem Globetrotters. You couldn't buy a win on the road all season long. What happened in this playoff series? 3 playoff games at Staples Center, you lost all 3 of them. Everything you do during the season catches up to you in the playoffs. If you're injured all the time, if you can't play on the road, if you foul all the time, if you live by the 3 and die by the 3, guess what happens? A second round playoff exit. Your season is over. You're done. Jordan Poole, the last 5 games of the series, 5.8 points per game, 30% from the field, 0.6, 6/10 of a point from 3, 67% from the free throw line, 3.8 assists, 18.8 minutes. And he had the audacity to be upset about lack of minutes when you were on the court? You weren't doing anything. You didn't contribute anything. You were just out there. He was another guy playing Planet Fitness games. He, like Patrick Beverley, should stop by the front desk and pick up his complimentary Tootsie Roll. And also, feel free to use the vending machines that have soda in them at a fucking gym. I hate Planet Fitness. Jordan Poole was garbage. Abysmal. He sucked. The third highest paid player on the team. Only Klay Thompson and Wardell Stephen Curry make more money per year than Jordan Poole. They rewarded him with a brand new contract, and that's what he gave them? And it wasn't even just the Lakers series exclusively. He was bad the entire playoffs. He was missing. He was on a milk carton for the Sacramento series. He's been shit, the drizzling shits, the entire playoffs. Jordan Poole in the 2023 NBA playoffs averaged 10.3 points per game, 2.1 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 34% from the field, 25% from three, 87% from the free throw line. The third highest paid player on the Golden State Warrior roster. And that's what he gave you? Like I said, Draymond should have hit that motherfucker again before the playoffs started. Just walk up to him randomly. Hey, Jordan, how's it going? Bam! Just snuff him. Bow! Right in the face. Uppercut. Overhand right. Right hook. Haymaker. Whatever. Punch him in the ribs. Take out a steel chair. A kendo stick. Put him through a table. Jump off a ladder. Set him on fire. Do it. Do whatever it is you need to do to wake that guy up. Because he was sleeping. He was in a slumber the entire playoffs and much of this season. He was nothing. And it hurts me to do this because I like Klay Thompson a lot. All due respect, all praise is due to one of the top five greatest shooters I've ever seen play the game of basketball. And he's a nice guy. He's a cool dude. I actually met Klay Thompson before in downtown Oakland, California. There was an apartment complex right next to the gym I went to, Fitness SF, downtown Oakland, Lake Merritt, Lakeshore, Grand Avenue, all that shit. And I'm walking out the gym, and I saw a guy standing outside the apartment waiting to be buzzed up. And, you know, this is a basketball player we're talking about. Basketball players stand out in the crowd, obviously. These are freakishly tall human beings. Klay Thompson's about 6'6", 6'7". I'm 6'2", but he towers over me. I saw this guy, and I looked at him. I thought to myself, wait a minute. He looks like Klay Thompson. We're in Oakland, California. He's very tall. I think that's Klay Thompson. So I walked up to him, introduced myself, said, hey, man, I'm a fan of yours. I respect your game. I love the way you play basketball. I think you're awesome. Good luck to you tomorrow, because the following day, they had game one of a Western Conference playoff series against the Houston Rockets. So I said, hey, man, good luck to you tomorrow. I hope you guys win that series. And I can't stand James Harden and the way he plays basketball, so do me a favor and get rid of him. He laughed when I said that, too. True story. I like Klay Thompson. I fuck with Klay Thompson. Good dude. But we called it right down the middle on the Deion Gordon podcast, and he was also the drizzling shits in this series, especially the last four games of the series. Game three, Klay Thompson, 5 of 14 from the field. Game four, 3 for 11. Game five, 3 for 12. And game six, last night, 3 for 19. All anyone ever talked about, all I ever heard was about game six Klay Thompson. And he's earned that reputation. He's had tremendous performances in previous years in playoff series and games in game sixes. He's been awesome. He's been outstanding in game six, the majority of his career, especially when facing elimination. I got nothing but the utmost respect for Klay Thompson, but we got to call it like we see it. In games four, games three, four, five, and six, Klay Thompson was a habitat for humanity. He was shooting so many bricks, it looked like he was trying to build a house. Habitat for humanity. You might as well call Klay Thompson Jimmy Carter. Trash. Game six, he had plenty, a plethora of open looks. Couldn't make them. Could not convert. You hear people all the time talk about basketball, and they say it's a make-or-miss league. It's very true and it's very simple. It's a make or miss league. You make shots, you're going to win. You miss shots, you're going to lose. Klay Thompson missed a lot of shots, and that facilitated the Golden State Warriors' exit and departure from this 2023 NBA playoffs. Klay had 8 points last night. That's not good enough. Nowhere close to being good enough. As a matter of fact, the second best player that Golden State had last night, of all people, was Dante DiVincenzo. I thought he played well in game six, but it wasn't enough. Andrew Wiggins, give him all the credit in the world. We're talking about a guy playing with a rib cartilage fracture, and this guy is being tasked with having to guard LeBron James, especially in the post. Man, that could not have been easy. I give Wiggins all types of credit and all types of respect. You are not going to hear me speak in a negative way about Andrew Wiggins. Too much respect. You're out there playing with a broken rib, and you're playing against one of the greatest basketball players who ever lived. In my opinion, the third best player of all time, who's still somehow playing at a ridiculously high level. My God, LeBron had 30 last night. LeBron was the best player on the court last night at 38 years old. How much basketball has this guy played over the past 20 years? How much miles are on that car? LeBron James is like a vehicle from the Mason-Dixon auto auction. There's like 400,000 miles on it. The only difference is the car still runs perfectly. It goes from 0 to 60 in about four-tenths of a second. It's fucking incredible watching this guy play. He's amazing. I've given LeBron a lot of shit over the years. I've never been his biggest fan, but I call what I see. For what he's doing at this stage of the game and still arguably, debatably being the best player on the Laker roster between him and Anthony Davis. And Anthony Davis catches a lot of flack, a lot of shit, especially coming into last night's game. You had folks like Charles Barkley and Shaq, Stephen A. Smith, handkerchief head Negroes on TV ridiculing this man, trying to mock this man's injury. He may or may not have had a concussion in game five. He got forearm to the head by Kevon Looney, had to be taken off the court to the locker room in a wheelchair, disoriented. I mean, you take a shot like that to your temple, that's going to do damage to your equilibrium. And folks are trying to mock and ridicule that, man. Fuck out of here with that shit. Stop making fun of people getting hurt. It's sports. People get hurt. It happens. And it's unfortunate that AD has that reputation. Just being transparent, I've called him AD, which stands for always disabled, out of frustration. But when you really take a step back and look at him, man, most of his injuries are freak incidents. It's shit that just happens randomly. He just happens to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. But for LeBron to still be at a high level, he's not even 100%. LeBron got injured in the second half of the season, had a foot injury. He tweaked the injury, too, during this series. He came up lame, hobbling a little bit in game five. So for this guy to be 38, playing through injury, and still leading his team offensively and defensively, he's a different player now. He picks and chooses his spots. He doesn't always exert 100% energy at all times of the game, but whenever it's appropriate, whenever the time dictates, whenever it's needed, LeBron gives you 100% energy, especially on the defensive end. Every now and then, when it was appropriate, you saw 2013 Miami Heat LeBron James as far as defense was concerned. And the Laker defense as a team, as a collective, put a stranglehold on the Golden State Warriors. They put them in a straitjacket for the majority of this series. The Lakers are one of the best defensive teams in the NBA, especially after the All-Star break. And you saw that in the Memphis series, and you saw that in this Golden State series. Total team effort from everyone involved. Steph Curry, y'all know how I feel about Steph Curry, man. All the respect in the world. My favorite player in the NBA, Wardell Stephen Curry, the baddest light-skinned motherfucker since Malcolm X. However, this series, he had to exert so much energy to try to uplift his team because no one else was doing anything. And the Lakers, give Darvin Ham credit. The much maligned Darvin Ham. People try to ridicule him and say he's not a good coach. He doesn't make good adjustments. He has no clue what he's doing. This guy took a 2-10 basketball team to the Western Conference Final. And one of the bigger adjustments he made in this series was, we're going to exploit Steph Curry defensively. We're going to target him on pick and roll action and make him work defensively. And we're going to blitz him on offense whenever Golden State has the ball. We're going to throw a bunch of different looks at him, different defenders. Dennis Schroeder, I thought, played well defensively the entire series. Jared Vanderbilt, I thought, did an outstanding, excellent job on Curry this entire series. I thought it was a total team effort, and I thought the adjustment made by Darvin Ham to single out Curry defensively and go at him and make him work on that side of the floor was a great adjustment, because doing that hurts him offensively. He tires out. As great a shape as Steph is in, especially his cardio is on a different planet, it's otherworldly, the level of cardio that Steph Curry has, but he's only human, and eventually he's going to break down, and his legs weren't there, and his shot was off this series. Steph scored a lot of points this series, but it wasn't efficient. He had a lot of games where he might have scored 30 points, but he needed about 27, 28, 29 shots to score 30 points. They made him work. They chased him all over the floor. Attention to detail, focus, energy, communication on defense. It was a work of art. It was beautiful to watch. The Lakers played beautiful team basketball. And my man Austin Reeves is now back into the top 10 of Deion Gordon's top 10 favorite Caucasian people. Austin Reeves, my friend, welcome back. You redeemed yourself in games 5, especially game 6. Austin Reeves last night, 23 points on 7 of 12 from the field, 4 for 5 from 3, 5 rebounds, and one of those 4 3-point shots he made was a half-court heave at the buzzer before halftime that, to me, won the game. The game was over right then and there. The Lakers last night get off to a hot start in the first quarter. Golden State, hey, give them credit, defending champions, hearts, toughness, resiliency, fought back, and pride. Championship pride. They fought back and made a game out of it in the second quarter. It's 53-46 with about 10 seconds to go in the first half. Klay Thompson pulls up for a three, misses. Dante DiVincenzo gets the rebound. He goes up at the basket. He's met at the rim by my man Anthony Davis. AD sends it back, blocks the shot. Austin Reeves picks up the loose basketball and then throws it up from half court, and it goes in. He makes the shot from half court. 3-point shot before the buzzer is good. And instead of being potentially 53-49 or 53-48, that's a game, single digits. It's close, and Golden State would have had the momentum because they overcame a 17-point deficit in the first quarter to cut the lead to about, let's say, 4 or 5 going into the locker room, but that doesn't happen. Klay misses. DiVincenzo gets blocked. Austin Reeves' half-court shot goes in, and now we're talking about a 10-point lead going into the locker room. Ball game. It was over right then and there. The heart, the soul, the life was taken out of Golden State in that moment. If you look closely at Steph Curry, as he walks off the court, when the shot goes in, you can see Steph Curry's soul ascending to the heavens. He knew it was over right then and there. The whole team knew it was over. They're done. And then the third quarter, that famous Golden State Warriors third quarter death run doesn't happen. Instead, it's a Los Angeles Laker third quarter death run. And we win the game, going away, 122-101, and now we're moving on. Western Conference Finals for the Lakers and for the Golden State Warriors. A lot of questions, a lot of soul-searching is going to be done this offseason, and some roster reconstruction should be done. They need to get bigger. They need to get more athletic. They need taller basketball players. You can't win a championship being a small, miniature, diminutive basketball team in a basketball sense compared to other teams. The Lakers' size, length, physicality won this series. Bigger, stronger basketball team won the series. Plain and simple. Golden State, Draymond has a player option. You got to figure out what you're going to do with Jordan Poole. You just gave him that fat contract last season. I don't know what's going to happen with him going forward. Do you try to trade him? After this embarrassing performance in this year's playoffs, who even wants him? What kind of value does Jordan Poole even have? Klay Thompson, the second highest paid player on the team, in the twilight of his career, and with all fairness and with all due respect, he's not the player he once was, coming off a back-to-back devastating career-threatening, in some cases for some folks, it would have been career-ending injuries what Klay had to overcome to get back on the court to even play last season and help them win a championship in 2022. 2019 NBA final against Toronto, he tears his ACL. Trying to rehab, coming back from that, he tears his Achilles. Comes back last season, helps them win a championship. And that's a great story. And I was happy to see that. I'm a Klay Thompson fan. But at this stage of the game, with his inconsistencies, and once upon a time, Klay was a great defender. But because of those injuries, he's no longer the defensive presence that he was in the past. He's barbecue chicken on defense right now. And if his shot's not going in as it wasn't this series, he has no value. He's not giving you anything else. He's never been known as a creator. He's not going to set up other guys to score. He's a catch-and-shoot basketball player who once upon a time, before the injuries, was a great perimeter defensive player. But because of those injuries, the lateral foot speed, the quickness isn't there like it used to be. So he's not giving you anything defensively. He can't create. He's just a shooter. But if the shots ain't going in, what's he giving you? And if all he is a shooter, he's not worth what he's getting paid. Let's be honest. Let's call it as it is. He's a one-dimensional basketball player making over $40 million a season. It's not worth it. And reports have already come out from NBC Sports Bay Area, California, that there's going to be conversation this offseason with Klay Thompson about restructuring his contract. I agree with that. That's the appropriate thing to do. So you got to figure out what you're going to do with Klay. You got to figure out, is Draymond going to come back? I think so. I think Draymond does come back. Reports also from NBC Sports Bay Area, California have indicated that the Warrior organization would like to have Draymond Green back. I agree with that also. I don't think that Golden State has to go into a full roster overhaul, but some guys need to go in place of bigger, taller, more athletic, younger basketball players. I got the utmost respect for Andre Iguodala. However, he took up a roster spot that could have gone to a bigger basketball player that can actually play. And Iguodala, earlier today, as a matter of fact, announced his retirement. Congratulations to him. Good luck in retirement. Well-deserved, well-earned. Iguodala is a vital, essential piece of what Golden State has been able to accomplish in the past decade. They would have had a hard time winning four championships without Andre Iguodala. Salute to him. He was a Finals MVP. The first championship they won in 2015, he was an NBA Finals MVP. I think in summary, Golden State as a Laker fan, my perspective on this, they reminded me of the 2002 Los Angeles Lakers. Coming off a championship, they were a disjointed, fractured basketball team. Internal friction, Kobe and Shaq going at it. The well-publicized internal rivalry between Kobe and Shaq. Kobe played all 82 games that season. Shaq didn't. Shaq had bad feet, bad toes. He was hindered all season by that. He was overweight, out of shape. And him and Kobe just couldn't get on the same page. And that was really the boiling points of the Kobe and Shaq rivalry, the beef between them. And also Kobe and Phil weren't getting along. It was shortly after that season that Phil wrote that book where he talked about in great detail the issues he had with Kobe Bryant. So you had internal friction, role players not playing up to a standard, and the Lakers kind of limped along. I mean, they began that season, I think, something like 11-19 in 2002, coming off a championship, coming off their third consecutive championship. They destroyed the New Jersey Nets in the previous year NBA final. But in 2003, you could see something was off. It wasn't right. And like I said, they began that season 11-19 and just sort of limped along that season, made the playoffs as a 5 seed, didn't even have home court advantage. They barely got by Minnesota, the number four seed that year. They beat Minnesota, but then in the second round, they get taken out in six games by the San Antonio Spurs, and the Spurs that year went on to win another their second championship in franchise history for them. So, yeah, as a Laker fan, that's my perspective on this. This year's Warriors team reminded me of the 2003 Los Angeles Lakers, a team that really didn't have a chance to begin with. You can't just turn it on. It's not a light switch. And eventually, the attrition of chasing the championship for so many years catches up to you. These guys, Draymond, Steph, Klay, are all in their 30s. Iguodala's 38 and just retired. Wiggins is somewhere catching up, creeping up on 30. This is an older basketball team, and the younger guys on that team never really materialize. James Wiseman got traded from Golden State to Detroit. They didn't think he was developing at a fast enough clip. Kuminga didn't play at all this series, and reports are that he was frustrated. The other reports are that he didn't play because he has a bad attitude. Jordan Poole already talked about him. So if your young guys aren't playing well and your old guys are showing signs of age and attrition, you add all that up and the chemistry's fucked up, you add all that up and that equals a second round playoff exit. So, yeah, we're going to see what happens with Golden State going forward as far as my beloved Lakers. We know what's going to happen going forward. Tuesday night in the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado, game one of the NBA Western Conference Final. Because the other night, man, oh my God, this was no limit sneaker ugly in Phoenix, Arizona. The Denver Nuggets curb stomped the Phoenix Suns. The Denver Nuggets put the Phoenix Suns body bag in a body bag in a body bag in a body cast, took it out, shot their ass, threw it out in some more trash, all that. They fucked them up. That was bad, dude. That was really bad. For the second year in a row, the Phoenix Suns season comes to an end at home in the Valley of the Sun at the hands of a European basketball player kicking their ass. Beaten seven different shades of shit down their leg. Last year it was Luka. This year it was Nikola Jokic. They got chokeslammed through a table by the Denver Nuggets. Denver had 44 points in the first quarter of that game, 37 in the second, 81 points at halftime of an NBA playoff game. 81 points. At halftime of an NBA playoff game, an elimination game at that, on the road. Now listen, I understand Phoenix was a depleted basketball team. Chris Paul, groin injury in game two, never played again the rest of the series. DeAndre Ayton, a rib injury in game five, could not play in game six. Quite frankly, he wasn't that good in the first five games he played anyway. He got his lunch money taken by Nikola Jokic the entire series. He was a non-factor. The Phoenix Suns got to the second round by beating another depleted basketball team, the LA Clippers. Kawhi Leonard out with a knee injury. Paul George out with a knee injury. They had pretty much nothing. Russell Westbrook, once again, God bless him, he tried. But it wasn't enough. So the Clippers lost. The Suns moved on. But the Suns had no depth. They have no bench. My man Cameron Payne is really all they got off the bench. They had one game in this series. Their entire bench combined for 4 points. Like eight different dudes off the bench combined for 4 points. The only way Phoenix was going to win game six was if Devin Booker and Kevin Durant combined for about 90 points. Other than that, they had no chance. KD begins the game going 1-for-10, so you can throw that out the window. They're not combining for 90 points. KD finished with 23 on 8 of 19 shooting in an elimination game. Devin Booker, 12 points on 4-for-13 shooting. And everyone else, I mean, Landry Shamet, come on, 3-for-11. Cameron Payne, 31 points. Cameron Payne in game six, 12 for 16 from the field, 31 points. He was the best player they had in game six. But if Cameron Payne is the best player you got, you're not going to win. That's how you lose by 25 points. And it should have been worse. It was worse at halftime. They got fucked up in that game. That was a bad look. And first and foremost, congratulations to the Denver Nuggets. They did their job. Jokic, top two player in the NBA right now. Shame on Mark Jackson for not having Nikola Jokic on his MVP ballot. That's bullshit. I don't care how much you don't like white people. Certainly, I'm not all that high on them either. But I'm also an objective person. I'm also an honest individual. As I say at the onset of every podcast, I call things right down the middle. You cannot have an MVP ballot this season and not have the two-time defending MVP on the fucking ballot. Nikola Jokic was left off of Mark Jackson's MVP ballot? Are you serious? That's unconscionable. That's crazy. That's ridiculous. That's preposterous. That can't happen. That cannot happen. That just goes to show you, these postseason awards primarily are about favoritism. I thought it was bullshit how Jokic wasn't even a first-team All-NBA player. How is a guy second in the MVP voting, but not first-team All-NBA? Now, a lot of people might hear that and say, well, it's based on position. My rebuttal to that would be, that's an outdated way to look at things. Stop trying to judge and evaluate your All-NBA teams based off position. Basketball, now more than ever, is a positionless game. It doesn't matter what position you're listed as in the box score. That's irrelevant. Everyone on a basketball court in 2023 is playing positionless basketball. Just because, I said this before in the previous podcast talking about Steph Curry and Magic Johnson. Just because you're a five, a center, doesn't mean you exclusively play on the low block. Most fives play on the perimeter. Jokic has the ability to play on the perimeter, and he's the best passer on his team. He's a seven-foot point guard who can also step behind the three-point arc. And when he needs to, he can go on the low block and kill somebody. He's incredible. His footwork, his artistry, his soft touch around the rim, the way he goes about his business, this is going to be a tough matchup for the Lakers. I'll be honest about that. I can be transparent about that. This is not going to be easy. This will be the toughest matchup the Lakers have encountered so far in the playoffs because of Nikola Jokic, who, like I said, is a top two player in the NBA right now. Give that man his credit. I don't care what color he is. I don't care if he's European or not. If you're a great basketball player, you're a great basketball player. That guy should have been All-NBA first team, and he damn sure should have been on everybody's MVP ballot. That's fucking ridiculous. Mark Jackson, normally I got a lot of respect for you, and I respect your opinion. And Mark Jackson, Jeff Van Gundy, Mike Breen do an A-plus job covering the NBA for ESPN. Matter of fact, they are in a minority of people that do a great job covering basketball for ESPN because ESPN's basketball coverage is fucking awful. Like, that studio show is embarrassing. Mike Greenberg this past week said two of the most idiotic, nonsensical, stupid things I've ever heard in mainstream sports media, and that's saying a lot, because on a daily basis, mainstream sports media has deteriorated into a race, a competition to see who can say the dumbest shit possible. Mainstream sports media, unfortunately, nowadays is nothing more than online comment sections come to life. And Mike Greenberg of ESPN embodies all this and really embarrassed himself this week by saying, number one, the Miami Heat have an advantage over the New York Knicks because of the weather in Miami. I didn't know basketball games now are played outdoors. I could have sworn every basketball game is played indoors in an arena that has air conditioning. What are you talking about? The outside elements do not impact basketball games. I was in Miami, Florida, about a month ago. Mike Greenberg said that when you go to Miami, because it's so hot and humid, it takes you a long time to adjust, to get acclimated to the weather down there, especially for a team coming from New York that plays, that lives in cold weather conditions. I spent 5 days in Miami. My flight got canceled twice, so I spent two extra days there. The weather did not impact me at all. It was still hot. It was hot. It was humid. It was about 85 or 90 every goddamn day. It's Miami, Florida. This time of the year is going to be hot. I didn't feel tired. I didn't feel sluggish. I wasn't worn down. I'm just a guy who goes to the gym 4 or 5 days a week. I'm not a world-class professional athlete. I would assume that world-class professional athletes to have access to unlimited amenities can take care of themselves and be ready and prepared to play basketball games in Miami in fucking doors, in air conditioning. What are you talking about? That's just asinine. That's just completely bereft of intelligence. That's intellectual irresponsibility. That's journalistic malpractice. And then to further embarrass himself, he said that the Lakers, when they had a 3-1 lead against Golden State, should just basically forfeit game 5. Don't even play your starters. Sit LeBron, sit AD. Don't even try. Just go ahead and concede defeat and let Golden State win, because apparently you have no chance. You're not going to win anyway. These are the same people that during the regular season cry and complain and bitch and moan about load management and players sitting out games and that being a disservice to the fans, which I agree with. It is a disservice to the fans, people like us, people who pay their salaries. It is a tremendous disservice. You got folks out here who might travel hundreds of thousands of miles to go see their favorite basketball player play, whether that be LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, fill in the blank, whoever, James Harden, Paul George, Jason Tatum, whoever we're talking about. Fans pay a lot of money to come see these guys play basketball, so load management is bullshit. But if you're going to complain about that during the regular season, why are you advocating for it during the postseason? What are you talking about? This is a playoff series. You can't just let a team win. Momentum is everything in the NBA playoff series. Momentum is paramount. From a game-to-game basis, anything can happen that can directly impact the series. A turned ankle, a twisted knee, you collide with another player. We saw AD take a shot to the head in game 5. Thankfully, it didn't land him in concussion protocol. Anything can happen in an NBA playoff series. You never know. Like I said, momentum is paramount. You let a team win one game, they get confidence, they might get hot. They might have found something that you do wrong that they can exploit and you can't stop. And Golden State had game 5 at home and a potential game 7 at home. Game 6 was a must-win situation for the Lakers. They had to win that game. It didn't make any sense at all for Mike Greenberg to come out of his mouth and say the stupid, idiotic, asinine bullshit that he gets paid millions of dollars to say on ESPN. ESPN right now is going through budget cuts. They're letting on-screen quote-unquote talent, quotation marks around the word talent, go because they can't afford to pay certain people. They're trying to cut back on money. And you got a guy as high profile as Mike Greenberg making the money he's making on TV saying stupid shit like that? Get the fuck out of here. But once going back to my original point, Mark Jackson does a great job on ESPN. He's one of the few good ones. So when I found out that he left Nikola Jokic off his MVP ballot, I was disappointed. That's garbage. As far as the Phoenix Suns are concerned, a lot of questions to be answered for that team. Is Chris Paul going to be back next season? I would think probably not. 38, injury prone. I think he's gone as far as he can go for the Phoenix Suns. It's been a great ride. They got to an NBA final in 2021 being led by Chris Paul. They came up short against the Milwaukee Bucks. Didn't work out for them. DeAndre Ayton should also be gone from Phoenix. He has to go. There's been so many clips, and you've seen so many instances during his playoff run where he's being disrespectful to his teammates, to his coaches. He isolates himself. He's looking like a bad teammate. He's looking like he has character and attitude issues, and also the on-court product does not warrant a guy having attitude and character issues. He's not a guy that's good enough to compensate for having attitude and character problems. He's not putting up crazy numbers. He's not affecting the game. He's not a great basketball player. He's a pretty good player. And that's really where it stops. But for a pretty good player to be making the money he's making and to have the attitude and the character issues he's demonstrated, it's not worth it. He has to go. I think you keep Devin Booker. He's the best player. He's your franchise. Kevin Durant, you made that midseason trade with Brooklyn to bring him in. Keep him as well and try to see where it goes next season when you get a full season of Devin Booker and Kevin Durant being together. You only got about 30 games of Devin Booker and Kevin Durant together this season. Obviously, you would want to see where it's going to go next season with these guys being together for a full 82. But it hurts me to say this. It hurts me to say this a lot. I like Kevin Durant, another guy, one of my favorite players, another guy that I met before at a mall in Pentagon City, Maryland, right outside of D.C. in Arlington, Virginia. I met him his rookie season, same thing. Walked up to him, dapped him up, said, "Hey, man, I know who you are. You're Kevin Durant, right? I saw you play at Texas. You're a great basketball player. Good luck to you on your rookie season." At that time, he was playing for the Seattle Supersonics, the team he was drafted by. He was going into his rookie season. As a matter of fact, I was in a shoe store looking at Kevin Durant's signature sneaker when I saw him and about five other brothers that were about 7 feet tall as well. Obviously, these guys play basketball. Walked up to him, introduced myself, had a short conversation, chopped it up, shot the shit, whatever. I went my way, he went his way. It was what it was, but I like Kevin Durant. I've always liked Kevin Durant. I root for Kevin Durant, but the facts, the reality is his legacy is going to be the best and most skilled sidekick ever. The most skilled Robin, the most skilled bus rider, not bus driver, bus rider ever. If he's your secondary player, you can win championships. We saw that in Golden State. He's a better player than Steph Curry, but Steph Curry is more important. And Curry was the face of the franchise, always has been and always will be. They love Curry out there. KD was a hired gun, a mercenary, a means to an end. We need you to beat LeBron. That's really all it is. If you remember 2016, Kevin Durant still in Oklahoma City, teammates of Russell Westbrook. They had a 3-1 lead in that Western Conference final against Golden State, and they blew that lead. The Warriors came back. That's when you saw Game 6 Klay in that series. The Warriors came back and won that series and advanced to the NBA Finals, where they then blew a 3-1 lead to Cleveland and lost that series in one of the most iconic NBA finals of all time. But how many all-stars has Kevin Durant played with to only have two championships? Westbrook, James Harden. Now, I recognize James Harden at that point of his career when he played alongside KD was a sixth man off the bench. He didn't really become the all-star MVP James Harden until he went to Houston, but still he's a great player. You had two great players alongside of you. Then you go to Golden State. You win two championships. You had Steph Curry. You had Klay Thompson. You had Draymond Green. But you get tired of people saying that you joined forces with Golden State. You had to team up with an already great team, a team that won 73 games. You ran out of Oklahoma City with your tail tucked between your legs. You gave up. You quit. You're not man enough. You're not a leader. You're not a number one guy. You're not an alpha male. All you are is a team up kind of guy, a front runner. You joined forces. You sold out, the biggest bitch move in the history of the NBA. You ruined basketball for about 2 or 3 years. That's the conversation that people were having about Kevin Durant during that time. The 2017 and 2018 NBA Finals are maybe the two least competitive NBA Finals I've ever seen. 2007 as well, San Antonio versus LeBron. You know what? I'm making a great case for LeBron right now. All the LeBron, all the witnesses out there should love what I'm saying right now, because the three least competitive and the three most obvious and lopsided NBA finals I've ever seen. 2007, 2017, 2018. And LeBron was in the middle of all that. He was in all three of those finals. All the witnesses should love what I'm saying right now. LeBron was on the receiving end of the three most lopsided, most stacked in one direction NBA finals ever. 2017 and 2018, there was not a team alive on this planet that were going to beat Golden State in those two seasons. The NBA would have been better off sending the Eastern Conference All-Stars to the NBA Finals to compete against what was essentially the Western Conference All-Stars, the 2017-2018 Golden State Warriors. And a lot of people held a grudge against Kevin Durant. A lot of people still do have vitriol towards Kevin Durant for that decision to leave Oklahoma City and go to Golden State and join forces with an already stacked basketball team. So he tried to prove people wrong. He tried to show everyone, I can do this by myself. I don't need Steph Curry. I don't need that Golden State machine. I don't need Klay Thompson. I don't need Draymond. I don't need Steve Kerr. I can go somewhere else to a different team with no championship pedigree, and I can take them to the finals and win it. He went to Brooklyn and aligned himself with Kyrie Irving and James Harden again and handpicked their own coach and Steve Nash. And the result of that was the biggest, most catastrophic, calamitous failure in NBA history. The Brooklyn Nets of 2019 to about 2023, the biggest failure in NBA history. The only real competition that they have in that department would be the LA Clippers of the same exact era. The Clippers and the Nets, 2019 to this season, complete disasters, catastrophic failures. Super teams that weren't so super, never got the job done, never even appeared in the NBA final. At least the Clippers got to a Western Conference final. 2021, that happened. They lost to the Phoenix Suns that season. At least the Clippers can say, we made it to a conference final. The Brooklyn Nets, as far as they got, was the Eastern Conference semifinal against the Milwaukee Bucks. They took them to seven games. And if Kevin Durant wore a smaller sneaker, they probably beat Milwaukee in that series. But his toe was on the line for a potential game-winning three. He made the shot, but it counted as a two because his foot was on the line. They lost that game in overtime, and they lost that series. And Milwaukee advanced. The farthest they got was the semifinal. They got swept last year in the Eastern Conference quarterfinal against the Boston Celtics. 4-0, they brought in Ben Simmons. They traded James Harden for Ben Simmons, pretty much. Ben Simmons is an absolute joke. He's about as effective as a solar-powered flashlight. He's worthless. There's nothing to him as a basketball player. The Kyrie Irving situation off the court primarily that got blown out of proportion. I spoke about that on previous podcasts, but that was a thing. And then Kyrie got dealt to Dallas, and then KD got dealt to Phoenix, and the whole situation in Brooklyn that never amounted to shit got blown up. And whether people like it or not, that's a stain on Kevin Durant's legacy. And then you go to Phoenix and you play with three more All-Stars: Chris Paul, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton. And the result, you get earth, wind, fire, and ice beaten out of you in the second round playoff series by the Denver Nuggets. You give up 81 points in the first half. You lose by 25. It's bad. There's no other way to put it. He is the most skilled sidekick who ever played basketball. The most skilled and most talented secondary option in the history of pro basketball. He can never be a leader and take a team to a championship. It's been proven. How much more evidence do we need? How many All-Stars does he have to play with to bear this out? I like Kevin Durant. I don't even want to say this, but facts are facts and reality is reality, and your feelings don't matter in the face of facts. It doesn't matter. These are the results. and the results have not been good. And Kevin Durant, as great and skilled and talented as he is, from an artistic standpoint, the artistry of his game is unparalleled. His bag, his moveset, his repertoire, on a whole different level. Few can even be on his level as far as pure skill and artistry of playing basketball is concerned. Footwork, jump shot, crossover, dribble pull-up, everything. Post-up game, one-footers, the Dirk Nowitzki shot he does. Being 6'11", 7 feet tall, and having guard skills, he is a phenomenal basketball player. He's a great offensive player. He plays great defense from time to time when he's 100% motivated. He's a great, I wouldn't say great. He's a pretty good defensive player. He's a great basketball player overall. He's a top 75 player. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Easily. No question about that. A living legend, an icon of the sports. One of, I would say the top 20, 25 best basketball players ever is Kevin Durant. But he's not a leader. He's not a guy that's going to be number one and galvanize a team and lead them to a championship. That's been proven too many times. He had to go to Golden State and ride Steph Curry's coattails to win a championship. Yes, he was the best player on the team, but go back and watch those games. How many open looks, how many one-on-ones did he get because of Steph Curry? Curry's ability to stretch out the defense and make a defense play 35 feet from the basket, drawing double teams, triple teams. Imagine being double teamed when your teammates are Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant. That's why people say it wasn't even fair for about 2.5 years for the Golden State Warriors. It wasn't fair. It was completely ridiculous to see that much talent on one basketball team on the court together. And that's just what it is. That's reality, man. Kevin Durant, all-time great, but was never the guy to lead a team. He's had opportunities. Oklahoma City and Brooklyn, you had opportunities and you fell flat. You couldn't do it. Monty Williams as well. Monty Williams may or may not get fired from the Phoenix Suns. That's a possibility. That's a thing. I mean, you're talking about two back-to-back embarrassing playoff performances for the Phoenix Suns. Got obliterated last year by Dallas. Got thrown off a balcony this year by the Denver Nuggets. And Monty Williams has been there the entire time. And Monty Williams is well-liked and well-respected. But sometimes you got to go in a different direction. Milwaukee fired Budenholzer, who won a championship two years ago. He beat Monty Williams in that NBA Finals. And he got fired 2 years later. Nick Nurse won a championship for Toronto in 2019. He just got fired. So we got a culture in the NBA of championship coaches, guys who actually won a championship. Frank Vogel for the Lakers in 2020 won a championship. He got fired about a year or 2 years later. These guys actually won championships. Monty Williams has not won anything. He's fallen flat in back-to-back seasons. As far as Monty Williams and his job prospects for the Phoenix Suns going forward, in the words of legendary professional wrestler John Cena, your time is up, your time is now. I think the time has run out. The sun has set for Monty Williams in Phoenix as head coach of the Phoenix Suns. Moving on to the Eastern Conference, let's have a round of applause, a standing ovation. All the credit, all praise is due, given to the Miami Heat. Eric Spoelstra and the Miami Heat. Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat. Pat Riley and the Miami Heat. The Heat culture prevails once again. We're talking about an 8 seed. We're talking about a play-in team. We got 2 play-in teams that have found their way to the conference final. The Miami Heat lost their first play-in game to the Atlanta Hawks and then won, barely, had to come from behind to beat the Chicago Bulls in the second play-in game, a game that I was at. You are welcome, Heat fans. I should be considered a good luck charm. I'm like a lucky rabbit's foot. I'm a good luck charm. I was in the building for that play-in game against Chicago. Won that game and then upset the number one seed, Milwaukee Bucks, in the first round in 5 games. A play-in tournament winner, a play-in team, knocked out the number one seed in five games. That's why Mike Budenholzer got fired. Because of that, you can't, there's no way you can't survive that. You can't be the coach of a number one seed team and get taken out in five games by a team that barely even made the playoffs. That can't happen. But give Miami all the credit in the world, man. In all seriousness, that Heat culture is for real. They got a bunch of guys. I said this on the last podcast. Miami might be the least talented team remaining in the NBA playoffs. But yet here they are in the NBA Eastern Conference Final. They took out the New York Knicks last night. Give New York a lot of credit. It's a great season, great story for them. But in the end, it wasn't enough. Jalen Brunson was all they had. And Jalen Brunson had to play the entire 48 minutes of game five in order for them to win. That's not sustainable. You saw how gassed he was towards the end of game six. Tremendous effort by Miami. Team effort. Jimmy Butler leads the way. But you also have guys like Kyle Lowry. See, I'm black. Sometimes I fuck up words. Kyle Lowry and his championship experience coming over from Toronto made contributions. You got guys like Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, Bam Adebayo, Kevin Love that they got in the buyout market, came in and contributed. The Heat culture, it matters. It's real. This is a team that has an identity. They know how they want to play basketball. And they go out and they get guys that correlate with the way they want to play basketball. They have a system in place, an understanding, a foundation. A lot of teams don't have that. They don't have an identity. They don't have a foundation. They don't know how they even want to play basketball. Miami, they ain't got those problems. They know who they are, and they know how they want to play basketball. Team-oriented, they can score, they can shoot from the perimeter, and they can also grind out a victory. I mean, that game last night was 95-86. It wasn't like it was 134-128. It was 95-86. That was a grinded-out, old-school Eastern Conference basketball game, and they came out victorious. They can beat you in different ways, and for New York, I knew New York was in trouble because I knew they were in trouble when they barely won game two and Jimmy Butler didn't even play in that game. Jimmy Butler was out for an ankle injury and Miami still on the road in Madison Square Garden almost won that game even without the services of Jimmy Butler, aka the second coming of Michael Jordan, the reincarnation of Michael Jordan. I knew it was over. I knew the Knicks were in trouble. Julius Randle, RJ Barrett, there's a lot to be desired. I like both those guys, but not enough. Not nearly enough. They were trash. Call it what it is. They were both trash in game six. Julius Randle in game six last night, 3-for-14, 15 points. Ugh. Yikes. His nastiness was only surpassed by his teammate, RJ Barrett. 1-for-10, 11 points. Nah, that's not good enough. Jalen Brunson goes for 41. And belay my last, I said the score was 95-86. It was 96-92 Miami. But Brunson carried the team. And Randall and Barrett gave nothing. Zero, zilch, nada, squadouche. Trash, both of them. The drizzling shits, excrements, basura. Julius Randle and RJ Barrett, they both sucked last night in an elimination game. Wouldn't surprise me if Randle got moved in the offseason. It's been consecutive playoffs now. Not consecutive, but whenever they make the playoffs, he don't play too well. He gets exposed. His limited game, his limited arsenal gets exposed. I think he's a good player. I always liked Julius Randle, former Laker Julius Randle. We drafted him, and I was sad to see him go. But in the playoffs, man, he disappears. It's not there, and you're going to need better than that. I thought Tom Thibodeau kind of fucked up down the stretch. I mean, they had an opportunity to win that game after a brutal flagrant foul call. that went against Miami and allowed New York to cut the lead to 92-90. And then Jimmy Butler misses a shot. Knicks get the rebound with about 30 seconds left to go. They got one timeout left. You got one round loaded in the chamber. You're facing elimination. You can't take these timeouts with you. Why not just call timeout, settle your team down, try to draw up a play, and get the best shot possible? But Thibodeau trusted his team, trusted Jalen Brunson in particular, and then Jalen Brunson dribbles into a double team on the baseline and then turns the ball over. Miami gets possession, and they hang on to win 96-92. And they're going to advance to the NBA Eastern Conference Final, where their opponent will be, well, we don't know yet, because there's a Game 7 tomorrow. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston Celtics will do battle one more time in Game 7. A lot of people thought that Philadelphia was going to win Game 6. I don't know what's wrong with people sometimes. Pay attention to history. I've said this before. As long as the 76ers have what I like to call the Bermuda Triangle of Failure, Doc Rivers, no other coach in NBA history has blown more 3-1 leads than Doc Rivers. This time, it's a 3-2 lead. But they're in prime position to blow that lead. Doc Rivers, James Harden, Joel Embiid, your NBA, your 2022-2023 NBA League MVP, Joel Embiid. You got all this in your favor. You steal Game 5. Not even steal, you dominated in Game 5. Boston got booed off the home court. All the Celtics fans, all the folks, I can only imagine all the racial slurs and insults being hurled inside of a TD Bank North Garden, wherever the fuck it's called. I can only imagine all the times that Jason Tatum was called the N-word and Jaylen Brown was called a Monday inside that building in Game 5. But you go on the road, you win Game 6. Jason Tatum didn't even play well for the first three quarters. He was awful the first three quarters. Only had 3 points. Couldn't shoot. Couldn't make anything. Couldn't hit the broad side of a barn. He was terrible until the fourth quarter. That's when it matters most. That's when stars, that's when legacies are made. That's when your legacy is created anyway, in the fourth quarter. Crunch time. Money time, winning time. There was Jason Tatum. 16 points in the fourth quarter of Game 6. On the road, hostile environment. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the crowd is raucous, rowdy, rabid. Anticipatory of their team clinching this series and moving on to the conference finals for the first time since 2001, being led by Allen Iverson, my man, Allen Iverson, but it wasn't meant to be, at least not in Game 6. Couldn't close it out. Embiid, where was he at in the fourth quarter? He was a ghost. He was also on a milk carton. He was a ghost, non-existent. James Harden, nothing in the fourth quarter of Game 6. You got an opportunity to close the deal. Finish what you started. You don't want to go back to Boston. You don't want to go back on the road to the team that's favored to win this series anyway. That's why I said earlier, I felt like Game 6 for the Lakers was imperative. They had to win. You don't want to go back to San Francisco. You are not trying to get back on a flight and go play that team in their building with everything on the line. And Philadelphia fucked up. And now the stage is set for tomorrow afternoon for Mother's Day. We're talking about Game 7. In Boston, Massachusetts, that crowd is going to be energized. They're going to be rowdy, raucous, and rabid in their own right. Jaylen Brown called out the fans in Boston, said, "We need better. We need energy from you." I'm not sure how smart and wise that might be. I'm not sure if you want to go down that road if you're Jaylen Brown, but because let's say you don't play well. Let's say Jaylen Brown stinks to join up tomorrow. All the articles, all the talk, social media is going to be about you. You called the fans out, and you went out there and laid an egg. So for Jaylen Brown's sake, I hope he plays well. I hope that brother has a good game tomorrow. The Philadelphia 76ers, I don't trust them, like, at all, under any circumstances. I fully expect the Boston Celtics to win that game, to win Game 7, and move on to the Eastern Conference Finals. A rematch of last year's Eastern Conference Final, the Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat. How about that? Consecutive years. Last year, it was Boston that won in advance to the NBA Finals, where they lost in 6 games to the Golden State Warriors. Their head coach in Boston, Joe Mazzulla, filling in for Ime Udoka, who fucked a co-worker and lost his job. I always tell people, don't shit where you eat. It's going to cost you in the long run. Do not shit where you eat. Translation, don't fuck your co-workers. It's never going to turn out well for you. Never. I've seen this with my own 2 eyes. Don't do it. I saw this in the Navy consistently and repeatedly. That brand new check-in with the big ass, leave her alone. Let someone else fuck her. Fuck a different girl. Get some girl out in town. Do not fuck the new check-in. Because eventually people start talking and shit comes to pass. The chickens come home to roost. And eventually motherfuckers say one thing or another. Next thing you know, you caught up in some bullshit. And now you got to stand in front of the captain of the squadron. And next thing you know, you're down a month's pay times 2. And you're on a different and lower pay grade. Don't shit where you eat. Don't fuck your coworkers. Ime Udoka lost his job for fucking a coworker. Consensually, the other bitch agreed. The bitch agreed to it. Consensual sex, but still, he lost his job. So Joe Mazzulla comes in. He's the new coach of the Boston Celtics this season. First year NBA coach. And I think in a lot of ways, he's trying to prove himself. A lot of times in the post game, he'll tell the media, hey, you guys didn't notice that adjustment I made? You're not giving me my credit. How come you guys ain't giving me my credit? You guys are quick to assess blame when something goes wrong. He's always asking for credit and for respect. And that's indicative of a first-year head coach trying to prove himself. Just go out there and do your job, man. As another coach in that area of the country always says, Bill Belichick always says, do your job. Nothing more, nothing less. Joe Mazzulla, just do your job. The results will come and the praise from the media will come. Give him credit. He wants his credit. I'll give that man his credit. He made a great adjustment in Game 6 that you should look forward to in Game 7. He played Robert Williams and Al Horford together in Game 6, something he wasn't doing at all in the previous 5 games. Boston got to the NBA Finals last season with Robert Williams and Al Horford playing together in the starting 5. I think Mazzulla came in trying to leave his own imprint on the basketball team and trying to do things his way. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. It works. The formula was already there. The team, the exact team from last season remains. Just do everything Ime Udoka did. Stop searching for compliments. Stop searching for praise. Stop trying to prove yourself. Stop trying to make shit harder than what it needs to be. Just do what Ime Udoka did. Play Robert Williams and Al Horford together in the starting 5. They did it last season, and they got to the NBA Finals, and they had a 2-1 lead before they blew it against the Golden State Warriors. But still, they got to the NBA Finals with that same lineup. It's not hard. Don't deviate. Stop trying to be a genius. I'm a 49er fan. Once again, I'm always going to figure out a way to slide the 49ers into a podcast. I'm a 49er fan. Kyle Shanahan always gets himself in trouble because he's trying to show everyone how much of a genius he is. No one cares. They don't hand out trophies for the coach being a genius. They hand out trophies for the coach winning a championship. Focus on the basics, Joe Mazzulla, and everything will be just fine. So, with all of that being said, This concludes this episode of the Deion Gordon Podcast. Eternally grateful, always humble, and very much appreciative. My favorite basketball team is going to the conference finals. How about you? Maybe your favorite team would be going to the conference finals if they had remembered to tread lightly like a woodpecker with a headache. Until next time, picture me rolling. I'm out.